Hello again, this is Malia Hill with the Grassroot Perspective Podcast, coming to you from the Grassroot Institute of Hawaii, Hawaii's number one think tank championing liberty and the free market. This week we had a hearing in the state legislature on Senate Bills 1085 and 646, more sort of colloquially known as a soda tax, but there's much more to that. Let me get to that in a second. Essentially, what we're talking about is a new tax, surprise, on sugar-sweetened beverages. The legislature's considering this because, well, if you ask me, because it combines two things that liberal governments love: higher taxes and nanny state interventionism. So, wow, best of both worlds. There are two measures before the committee, the Senate Committee on Health and the Senate Committee on Judiciary and Labor, focus mostly on 1085 because that's the one that I think is going to be the what gets passed through and continues, and it has a House version. House Bill 854 hasn't been scheduled for a hearing yet. But essentially what both these do is impose a tax on sugar-sweetened beverages. Depending on which side you're on, you'll either say it's a very small tax or a fairly significant tax. But the point of the matter is it's all wrapped up in this anti-obesity campaign idea, this notion that it's the responsibility of the government to come in and make us all more slender, more healthy, and so on and so forth. The implication being that to fat people are somehow a drag on our resources. No one really says that. Instead, the language is all about the epidemic and obesity, the crisis, and let's not forget multiple references to helping the cakey. You know, the big bad villain in this is almost always soda. It's easy to make this case. Soda. Soda is the villain. Soda is what's causing obesity. People drink too many sugared sodas. It's actually kind of ludicrous to think, oh, well, if we just make people drink less soda, then obesity will just disappear. Poof. It's gone. No soda. No obesity. Of course, I don't think anyone believes that. It's just an easy thing to pick on. The irony, however, is that this tax is not just about soda. This is a tax that's going to affect all sugar-sweetened drinks. So soda, juice, energy drinks, and even chocolate milk or flavored milks, pretty much all flavored milks. Some people will say not all juices. It doesn't affect any juice that doesn't have sugar added to it. In other words, if it's 100% juice, it's safe. So what is 100% juice? If that you have doesn't say 100% juice, if you didn't pay twice as much for it as every other juice on the supermarket shelf, you're not drinking 100% juice. Chances are, you know, what you think of as juice is going to be taxed under this measure. Oh gosh, the many ways in which this stuff just drives me crazy. There's the "we know what it's best for you" part of it. Government coming around to you and basically saying, "Do you really want that second cookie? You know, are you really sure you should drink that soda?" There's the fact that it's irrational in its aims. Will it curb obesity? There's really no evidence whatsoever to demonstrate that. You know, places that have looked at these kinds of things have concluded it doesn't curb obesity, it just causes taxes, it makes people upset. You know, it disproportionately affects the poor, but it doesn't mean that they drink less sugared drinks, it means they choose cheaper sugared drinks so that the tax burden isn't quite so high. Or they choose drinks that they can sweeten at home, like making iced tea and adding sugar separately. So it fails in that intent. It's one of those, another one of those feel-good, ineffective laws that, you know, make everyone feel like, ooh, this is something we can do. We're going to help the cakey. You know, the magic words. It's for the cakey. It's for the cakey that we're going to make it hard to buy juice. Irrational goals. And, you know, picking on sodas because it's easy. Because, you know, why not? Although, you know, to be fair, we have no indication whatsoever that it'll stop at that. You know, some other places that have experimented with taxes to these kinds of taxes have found that they're extremely difficult to levy and figure out and enforce. And I'm sure we'll get to go down that road if this passes. And maybe that's one of the, but it's, maybe it's a lot easier to tax that than cookies. Or maybe they just, you know, we're just step by step until everything that goes into your mouth is something that you're going to have to see if the government decided you should be eating or not. So I looked at some of the testimony for the cap that was sent in on for this hearings, and it's pretty much what you'd expect. lots and lots of public health groups saying, you know, please pass this because obesity, please pass this because of the children, and obesity is bad and it's an epidemic, and so the government should do something like pass sin taxes on it, because as we all know, sin taxes have virtually wiped out alcohol consumption and smoking. So lots of solid proof of how totally effective this is going to be. Occasionally, these sort of pro positions almost wander into to glimmerings of what's really at stake here, and that is tax money. There are groups. It's, you know, supposed to go to a special fund to, guess what, combat obesity. And there are people who can look at that and say, well, that's probably good for us. And so there's a certain amount of, please pass this because obesity is important and we should get some more money to do that. Okay. Even more occasionally, I'm not sure if I'm going to find that there was the one group that actually was opposed, but pointed out amongst other things that even if you have this, even if you get more, you know, increased tax revenue to combat obesity from this, you're basically creating a loop. If it's effective, you'll get less tax revenues, you'll have less money for your fund to combat obesity. Or it's ineffective and you have basically failed in your goal to combat obesity. So the rationale is ridiculous right off the bat. And then it's pointed out that just because the intent is to create a fund to combat obesity doesn't mean that the government will respect that. You know, such funds have been raided before for other reasons. So it's just sort of a, we'll create a fund that will probably be used to combat obesity. And if you even believe if you believe combating obesity is important, it's really pretty interestingly vague on how. It's just the logic. The logic just kills me. Anyway, every once in a while, there's some honesty. There's a testimony from Ho'olauhui Hawaii, who points out that poverty-stricken populations have a high incidence of obesity, but this bill won't do much to change their behavior because it's not soft drinks that are the pure cause of obesity. You know, are we going to tax candy and cookies and ice cream and just high carbohydrate diets? And are we just going to buy into whatever the current prevailing thought is on what the best nutrition and just determine, okay, then poverty-stricken people, we're going to just make it really hard to follow any diet, but the one that we do, we're just going to impose tax after tax until it's just too financially difficult to do anything but what the government thinks is best. Well, no one's proposing that right now. They're just taxing juice, except 100% juice, which you can't afford anyway because it's twice as expensive as other juice. You know who's obese here? The government is obese. The government is obese with these ticky-tacky taxes, these little teeny, let's raise the tax here, let's raise the taxes there. They need to go on a diet. If anyone needs to go on a diet, it's not us, the citizens of Hawaii. It's the Hawaii legislature and their unending quest to stuff more taxes down their own gullet, more tax revenues. You know, there was one interesting, very interesting, I thought, piece of testimony on it that was actually from the Itoen Corporation. They point out that the price of one case, 24 cans, of Aloha Made Passion Orange Juice is $7.79. Onto that, you add a 37-cent general excise tax, a $1.56 bottle and deposit fee, and then this proposed tax would add another $2.76. So that raises the total cost of the consumer for this case of juice from $7.79 to $12.48. So we are paying almost $5 more for a case of juice when you add in all the different taxes, including this new sugar tax. But you know, they're not going to call it the, hey, let's add $3 more to your case of juice tax. Now they're going to call it the anti-obesity sugar tax so that we can kind of sugar drink tax so that we can sort of cover up the intent and the effect. If someone just said to you, hey, to combat obesity, would you like to pay $2.76 more for a case of passion orange juice? You'd say, that's ridiculous. But it's all folded into this thing. They don't even come right out and tell you, oh, that's what it's going to be. It's all into this percentage of, you know, one penny per this percentage of sugar for this many grams for this many, you know, fluid ounces, so that it's all, you know, it's all just hidden in there in all the dense nearly incomprehensible send you to sleep language of the bill, which is its own level of complaints. It seems almost silly and unnecessary to do an up-down analysis on this, but just for the sake of it, you know, does taxing sugared beverages send us, you know, up to greater liberty and, you know, personal individual liberty, or down to greater government interference and tyranny? Well, we're basically handing over to the government saying, yes, absolutely, sin taxes. You should definitely dictate how easy it is, you know, whether it's desirable for us to drink certain things, and, you know, you should express that it's undesirable by making it more expensive. You should try to guide our behavior, because no one would question, I hope. Actually, some people probably would, but let's just get past that. Very few people would say that the government has a right to decide that you can't drink juice or soda. And no one's gone to that point yet. But this is just a little step in that direction. This is accepting, hey, the government should be sort of directing how people behave in otherwise innocuous private individual decisions. So it's incredibly obvious this is a down towards greater government tyranny, handing over more of our liberties, not to mention more of our money to the government. But, oh my goodness, irrational legislation, irrational reasoning, and we haven't even got, I didn't even mention the toll it's going to take on small business. One of the most consistent people is submitting testimony against it. Obviously, you expect the drink companies, you know, companies that make drinks like Edo and so on and so forth to submit testimony against it. But it also hurts restaurants. It also hurts pretty much anyone who sells sugared drinks, because you're cutting into their sales. You're trying to depress their sales. So small businesses, you know, both the small manufacturers in the islands and, you know, those who sell them, are hurt by it. The unions have, some of them, expressed opposition to it, again, because it's a direct hit against business in Hawaii. You know, when you look at the states that have strong, growing economies, you're not looking at states that say, let's just keep loading up taxes on the businesses in our states. So that's just another reason. How is this bill a bad idea? Let me count the ways. It's irrational. It's a hit against liberty. It's nanny statism. It's higher taxes. It's bad for business. It's bad for our economy. It's a bad, bad idea in general. Extremely intrusive, and not even guaranteed, or not guaranteed, not even really likely in any way to accomplish what it says it sets out to do. What it sets out to do is get money for the state, and that I'm sure it would accomplish. But it's all wrapped up in this combating obesity, and that's just not going to happen. Completely unrealistic. Now the Senate Bill 1085, I said before, the House version hasn't been scheduled for a hearing yet. There was a hearing on these two, 1085 and 646, on this week, on the 6th. At that time, it was deferred until next week. So the Senate Health Committee is going to, has deferred it until Monday, February 11th at 2 p.m. in conference room 229, if you're interested. And the Senate Judiciary, has deferred the measure until the 12th, so that would be Tuesday at 9:30 a.m. in conference room 16. This is all stuff you can find on the Hawaii State Legislature website, too, so you don't have to hope you weren't scrambling for pen or anything like that there. It looks to me like they just deferred the other measure, 646, so it looks to me like they're going to kind of proceed with 1085. It does have the House version, so that makes it more simple. And this is something we're going to watch carefully, so I'll let you know if the House version does come up for a hearing. I want to finish up just by responding. Last week we did a little bit on gun control and the various gun control measures before the Hawaii legislature, and I feel like I should acknowledge I've conversed in email with some people, several listeners, over what I said there and the whole issue of gun control. And I do think that those of us who are opposed to more restrictions on gun ownership need to acknowledge the very real fear and concern that things like Newtown have caused. You know, I am a parent, and I understand, you know, you can tell me rationally that these are exceptions, that they're vanishingly rare, that there's no real chance that this is going to happen and no real way to guarantee that it won't. And I can understand that on a rational basis, but the parent side of me hears chance. And so I sympathize with people who say, we have to figure out how to make sure these things don't happen again. I understand. You may rationally be able to say you can't really stop a crazy person, but there is that, especially when it comes to protecting children, that instinctual drive to do so. And so they're trying to find, how can we make this not happen? And so I think that when we're opposing gun control measures, and some of these are extremely well worth opposing with the incredible restrictions that they place on gun ownership, and frankly, to the point where, they're practically speaking a ban, a de facto ban, even if they don't actually, purport to be one. And we have to defend the way that guns and gun ownership is a great equalizer, especially for women and for the elderly. There's that story out of Tennessee with the 85-year-old woman this week who was able to defend herself with a gun. That's the great equalizer in these kinds of things. So it does, we need to make sure people understand, but it has stopped. It has stopped attacks, just someone being there with a gun. Like, it's not all bad. But we also have to acknowledge that there's a really valid and real worry and concern here, and to just ignore that the what's at the heart of that while we fight against these restrictions, it's not going to progress this, and it's going to just create this divide that, especially where where there's a preponderance of liberals, it makes it very difficult to fight. So we need to acknowledge, we need to offer solutions, but that doesn't mean that we need to step back our opposition. So that's all for this week. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I'll be back next week. I'm hoping to have Nasia Blum from the Hawaii Republican Party on to just sort of talk about what the future of the party in Hawaii is, or she hopes it is, and I'll kind of push her on that, especially from the, free market, why all the sort of middle of the road Republicans lately. We'll see what she has to say about that. And that's all. Make sure you send me any questions. You can email me at MaliaH@grassrootinstitute.org, or respond in the comments below, or direct message me on Twitter at Grassroot Hawaii. Heck, follow us on Twitter at Grassroot Hawaii too while you're at it. That's all, and aloha. See you next week.